equal time. Another viewpoint, other considerations. Equal time.
Good afternoon. I'm Carl Etnayer, today's host for Equal Time Radio. And as usual, your host on Mondays, my theme is energy, food, and the local economy at the end of the age of oil, as it is every week. And the blog with the name Relocalizing Vermont has more on this theme. I blog at the Vermont Commons website. That's vtcommons.org. Just go there and click on the blog link or type in vtcommons.org/blog. Also, I'm now posting within 24 hours or so of each show the audio. So if you hear something that you're interested in but you don't have time to listen to it all, or you want to tell a friend about something you were interested in, you can go to equaltimeradio.com and download the audio. Got a great show coming up for you today. Probably want to tell all your friends about this one. We're starting off with Tony Klein. He's the chair of the Vermont House Natural Resources and Energy Committee. He's going to talk about Vermont Yankee and other energy choices at the state level. Should Vermont require the owners of the nuclear power plant to pay for its decommissioning? That and other questions will be answered soon. Then in the second half of the show, we'll be talking with Dave Grundy. He's a chair of East Montpelier's Energy Committee, and he coordinates the Vermont Community Energy Mobilization Project in East Montpelier. In this project, neighbors are helping neighbors make their homes more energy efficient. A couple homeowners whose homes were recently visited by the East Montpelier team will also be on. We'll ask them about how the experience went for them, and one of them is going to be the well-known raconteur Willem Lang. But I want to begin on a personal note. On this station this morning, there was a fair amount of discussion of the bill before the legislature, the Religious Freedom and Marriage Equality Bill. It has a lot of support. I counted 60 sponsors when it was introduced. And the personal note is that I attended my sister's civil commitment ceremony in Wisconsin last summer. She and her partner, Lisa, had a beautiful ceremony. It was in a botanical garden with all the flowers in bloom, probably about 100 people from both families attending. The ceremony meant that not only do I have yet another charming sister-in-law, it meant another firefighter in the family, for what that's worth. My wife is an officer in the East Montpelier Fire Department. My new sister-in-law is a firefighter in Madison, Wisconsin. So Lynn and Lisa, they live in Wisconsin, and gay marriage isn't recognized there. So when I call Lisa my sister-in-law, technically that's not really right, but that's what I call her. That's the spirit of their commitment. Marriage certificate or not, it's been wonderful for Lynn, my sister, to have Lisa as a life partner. Lynn is, I wouldn't quite say that Lynn is giddy, but these days she's constantly sunny and upbeat ever since she and Lisa made their commitment. And in Wisconsin, Lynn and Lisa don't even have the protection of civil unions as they would if they lived in Vermont. Employers can refuse to allow Lynn to share Lisa's health benefits, or vice versa. Fortunately, they're both employed with jobs that have health benefits. If Lynn is hospitalized, Lisa doesn't have automatic visitation rights the way my wife would if I was hospitalized, and so on. Vermont ended a lot of this discrimination here in the state with a civil unions law, but even in Vermont, Lynn and Lisa would not have the same marriage protections that my wife and I have. They would not have federal benefits like Social Security survivor benefits. And since Vermont won't allow Lisa and Lynn to marry, living in Vermont would not even give them legal standing to challenge federal discrimination. Also, some states like New York, maybe they don't recognize civil unions, but they will recognize a valid marriage, even between same-sex couples from other states. So if Lynn and Lisa moved to New York after living in Vermont and marrying here, they'd be more protected there. Well, that would be true even if they were visiting New York, I guess. And that's important. One of them could get in an accident and be taken to the hospital there. So I remember 15, 20 years ago, when Lynn first came out to me, her fear of rejection by her parents or grandparents or others, that didn't happen. Our family continued to accept her as she is, just as they accept me as who I am, a heterosexual, middle-aged, married guy. I'm really happy for my sister that she's found such a great life partner. And I'm glad to have firefighter Lisa as a sister-in-law. I hope that Vermont passes a religious freedom and marriage equality bill. I thank all the sponsors of it, and that it somehow helps move the country in a direction that will give, eventually, Lynn and Lisa full equality with my wife and me and all other married couples. So that's my personal note to begin this show. A couple calendar items coming up. Thursday in Montpelier is the first meeting in the evening of the Central Vermont Food Systems Council. That's 6 to 8 p.m. in City Hall. The Food Systems Council is a community-based group whose mission it is to expand and strengthen Central Vermont's emerging sustainable food system to ensure that our whole community has access to affordable quality food. So we're going to get an introduction to the council, and this is about working, this is about making change happen on the ground fast. A lot of it's going to take place in the 8 different committees that have been set up in the council. FoodWorks is running this project, and a lot of good activity is going to happen here, I think. So if you live in the Washington County area or greater Montpelier area, please think about coming by Central Vermont Food Systems Council, open meeting 6 to 8 p.m. this Thursday night in City Hall. And also, next week, Monday, in Charlotte, there's a discussion beginning of the Transition Handbook, this very useful book for making the transition from oil dependence to community resilience. It's going to happen in the Charlotte Town Hall from 7 to 8:30 p.m. They'll be discussing Chapter 1 in the Transition Handbook. If you want more information on that, 425-3377. That's 425-3377. I'm going to move right along to our first guest. As I mentioned, it's Tony Klein. He is the chair of the House Natural Resources and Energy Committee. I always want to call it the Energy and Natural Resources Committee, but technically it's Natural Resources and Energy Committee. But right now they're looking at a lot of energy questions. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Carl. Glad to be here.
Is it correct that you're sort of front-loaded on energy questions in the committee this year?
I'm pretty front-loaded. Pretty focused on it.
Mm-hmm. And one of the questions that you're looking at is, should the owners of Vermont Yankee pay for its decommissioning, and when should they do that?
Yeah, we have a committee bill that we've been working on. I think we've been working on it for the last couple of weeks before we broke, and we are about ready to pass it out of committee the first week we're back. I'm just waiting for the firmer numbers on cost. The cost numbers change daily, as well as their existing revenues and the decommissioning fund changes daily, and they go in the opposite direction.
And when you say cost, you mean the cost of actually decommissioning the plant?
The cost of actually decommissioning the plant. Maybe your listeners would like to know or need to know that decommissioning can range from complete dismantling of the plant to a quote green field, and everywhere in between, and that site where Vermont Yankee is, because of its location in the corners of Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Vermont, because of its location near high-level transmission lines and substations, its nearness to the river and its nearness to the highway and rail system makes it a very, very valuable site to continue with another fuel source to produce electricity from that site. So the thought would be that, you know, hopefully that the decommissioning would be to really get rid of the high-level radioactive waste in the contaminated buildings, but leave the infrastructure available so that a new fuel source can be brought there to generate electricity.
And under current law and agreements and so on, is decommissioning to a greenfield status? Is that something that's required of the owner of Vermont Yankee?
Well, it's required by Vermont statute, and actually they agreed to it in the sale. It's not a requirement of the NRC.
Okay.
To do it, they don't require greenfielding.
Okay. So the background is that there's a decommissioning fund that Entergy Corporation sort of inherited when they bought Vermont Yankee, but it's been going down in value and decommissioning costs have been going up in value, correct?
Yeah, they bought the plant in 2002, and I can't remember whether the decommissioning fund was $308 million or $328 million at that time, and they were not required to make it additions to the fund, and they claim that's one of the reasons that we got such a low price per kilowatt for for the remainder of the license. But I actually have before me that March 31st in 2008, the fund grew to $427 million. Since that time, almost a year ago, it has been on a as all of our portfolios have been, it's been on a rapid descent line. And the last figure that we had, January 31st, the fund was down to $361 million, and that's what we began developing our bill around in our committee. And just today, I got the latest update, and as of February 28th, 2009, that fund has reduced further to $347 million. So in 1 month, it declined $14 million.
And as I recall, at the time that Entergy Corporation bought Vermont Yankee from Vermont Utilities, then there was some controversy because Entergy wanted to see the fund, expected to see the fund grow and grow, and they wanted to keep any excess over the cost of decommissioning. Is that right?
Yes, there was a fight about who would keep the excess, which seems to be not a problem these days.
Not a problem these days. So what would this bill in your committee do, Tony Klein?
The bill, well, first of all, we're working on the premise that we have two facts that are known today. And one is that we have a decommissioning fund that is woefully deficient to do the job. If that plant were to close in 2012, it would take our latest figures somewhere in the $750 and $800 million range to decommission the plant. So at $347 million, it is woefully deficient. The other fact that we're working on is that it's a distinct possibility that plant could close in 2012. And I say that because the license expires in March of 2012, and I say that because there are no talks, no negotiations going on right now to further extend, to create an agreement between our utilities and the plant that would warrant its continued operation.
Now wait a minute. I thought Green Mountain Power,
we're not naive enough to think or to believe that maybe that won't change. But right now, we are dealing with those two fundamental facts.
I thought Green Mountain Power and CVPS, Central Vermont Public Service, two big utilities in the state, were planning their futures around continuation of Yankee Power. Are you saying they're not negotiating on that?
They are not negotiating. We heard a lot of talk about, well, first of all, the negotiation schedule was supposed to be that there was going to be an agreement last September. Then that was changed to last December. And then 2 weeks ago, I had the vice president of Entergy in my committee, and he was telling us that it was not a matter of weeks, it was a matter of days before that, I guess, Entergy would make an offer to the utilities. That was 2 weeks ago, and I don't think anything has been done. And then the utilities and Entergy kept saying that, we're talking, there's activity, and I pressed them on this, and I finally got them on record to admit that no negotiations are going on right now, and in fact, no negotiations have occurred since last fall.
So
when I heard that, I said, you know what, we got to prepare for an eventuality that this plant's going to close, and that's when we started working on the decommissioning bill.
We have heard in a couple of different reports, I believe, over the last few months that electricity costs are going to be higher in the future after 2012 if Vermont Yankee is closed than if it's open. But it sounds to me, if there are no negotiations going on, like we have no idea how much electricity from Vermont Yankee is going to cost.
Well, that's exactly right. You don't know exactly how much it's going to cost. We know now because of the downturn in the economy and and the you know, the descending price of oil and natural gas, that the price on the spot market right now is very, very low. In fact, it's almost at the point where it's the same amount that we're paying under contract, and that may be one of the reasons why there are no negotiations from Energy's point of view, because they certainly don't want to be locked into a long-term, a 20-year contract at a fixed price with a spot market right now that's almost historically low.
All right.
At this point.
All right. See, I forgot to give the phone numbers at the beginning of the show, but of course your calls are welcome, listeners. The number here is 244-1777 in the local area. If you're calling from outside the local area, call on our dime at 877-291-8255. Our guest is Tony Klein. He's a chair of the Natural Resources and Energy Committee in the Vermont House. And Tony, you had stated these two facts about the Vermont Yankee decommissioning fund, that it's not enough to do the job if the plant closes down in 2012, and there's a distinct possibility that it will close in 2012. So what does that bill do based on those two understandings?
Well, what it does is creates a payment plan that would start in 2011. I think it's either, I think right now we have January 1st, 2011. They would have to make a contribution to the plant, and they would have to make another contribution in 2012, and then in 2015, and then in 2018, which at that point the decommissioning point fund will be full. I'm waiting to get the final numbers on cost to know what those four payments could be expected to be. However, what we've written into the bill is we've written a trigger date into the bill. I think you know that the legislature is due to vote on the continuation of operation of this plant at some point. We thought we were going to do it this year. Leadership has now publicly announced that we absolutely do not have the information and time to do it this year. So we will vote on the legislature will vote in the 2010 session. So here's what the bill says. The bill says that this payment plan will go forward unless the legislature votes to approve the continued operation of this plant. And if the legislature votes to approve the continued operation, that would happen, number one, in 2010, before the payment was due. And number two, it would be fairly obvious that if we were to vote as a legislature to want to continue its operation, then we would be happy with, one, the cost of electricity going forward for a long period of time. Two, we would be happy with the rearrangement of the property taxes that we probably will negotiate that they will pay. Three, we would be probably happy with the amount that we will require them to contribute to the Clean Energy Development Fund. And four, we will be satisfied that the decommissioning fund will be fully funded to the level necessary to have it decommissioned in the 20 years or whatever years they decide to continue to operate the plant.
So if the legislature does not vote to allow continued operation of the plant after March 2012, and your bill now has two payment dates for the decommissioning fund in 2015 and 2018, where do you expect that money after 2012 to come from for those payments?
I expect them to come from hopefully a little recovery in the market, so that there's a little recovery there, and I expect that the NRC and the Public Service Board, as they've told us so far, that Entergy is responsible for having the funds necessary to decommission that plant.
And that's a parent corporation, you mean, at that point?
I believe it's the parent corporation. Okay. I think that there will probably be a huge court battle about whether it is the, Entergy Nuclear Vermont Yankee, LLC, as I'm sure Vermont Yankee wants it to be, or whether it is the parent corporation, Entergy, which has assets to the tune of $33 billion.
That sounds like enough to take care of it.
I think so.
Tony Klein, got a lot of interest in this topic. We're going to go to the phone. First, we're going to go to Williamstown to Mark. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hi. Just a question. I've been kind of following this a little bit off and on. Now, the legislature has done a study on whether or not to vote to keep Yankee for another 20 years or to decommission in 2012. Am I correct?
No.
No, they have not.
I mean, we've requested a number of studies, but nothing like that. Perhaps you want to explain it a little differently.
Well, I guess the way I'm understanding it is that the legislature didn't vote this year because Entergy didn't give them a price on what they were going to charge them for power.
Well, that's
for 2012.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons why we wouldn't vote, because we wouldn't know what the economic benefit is.
Well, what, you know, is that really, should that really pertain to your vote, what the economic benefit is over the safety benefit? I would think that your vote would go safety and economics. Secondly, they're a business just like any other business in the state of Vermont. They need to make money, but, you know, it seems like you're holding off on a vote until if we get cheap power from them, you'll vote for it. If the power isn't going to be cheap, you're not going to vote for it. I think that really doesn't fall where it should.
Okay, let me try and dissect that a little bit. Number one, the NRC has supervision and authority over radiological safety of a nuclear power plant. We cannot even utter the word; otherwise, anything we do could be preempted by federal preemption. So, safety is really for the NRC. We look at reliability, health, and environmental. On the economic side, if there's no economic benefit to the state, why would the people of the state want to continue to have the huge liability that would be connected to it? If we're not going to get a good price of power, and therefore we're not going to purchase any power from the plant, why should we allow it to operate with all the liabilities going forward? And so I think that's one of the reasons that the legislature is waiting. It's also one of the factors that the Public Service Board, which has to issue a certificate of public good before the plant could continue operating, and they absolutely will not issue that certificate of public good unless they, number one, know what the price of power and the economic benefit is, and number two, they've had the time to really decide whether that's a benefit for Vermont.
Good questions, Mark. Thanks for your phone call. 244-1777 is a number, or toll-free 877-291-8255. We're now going to Shelburne, where Ted's on the line. Hello, Ted.
Yes, hi. Thanks very much. Partly you just addressed the radiation risk, and that does actually overflow into environment and health and so on, but I understand that that is to be decided by someone else, but it's a very serious consideration. I mean, I've been aware, well, we've all been aware of radiation for a long time. My own growing up was, my early years were in the 40s and so on, and, you know, my dad was a radiologist, and so I'm, you know, I've been just aware of all of the radiation effects on personkind and other creatures. And another thing that I've also noticed, that there is what I would call advertising campaign, and I'm not sure exactly of the genealogy of Vermont Energy Partnership, but it puts on a very it's a full page in the weeklies, and I noticed, I think it was the week before last at least, it was that major portion of a page in the Sunday Free Press, Burlington Free Press, of making points that are seem to be very slanted toward the friendliness of Vermont Yankee and not addressing a number of points. One is...
So what's your question?
Vermont, let me, I'll just do one more and then I'll quiet down here. Was just the amount of the plant production. I think, is it a third of the electricity produced by the plant that comes to Vermont?
Okay, let me... Thanks for your call.
Two things. The partnership that you refer to is a group of businesses that have bonded together, and one of those businesses is Entergy. So my personal opinion is they do have a bias toward the continued operation of that plant. The amount of power that plant produces right now, our two investor-owned utilities, Green Mountain Power and Central Vermont Public Service, purchase a total of 282 megawatts of power, from that plant. That is about a third of the power that Vermont uses. Both the utilities have told Entergy, and they have told us, the legislature, that if there is an agreement to go forward with this plant, that they will probably purchase about a third less than they've purchased in the past, because they felt that they had too much power coming from one source, and what made them nervous was that if that source had any problems and was not producing, that they were liable to replace that power from the expensive spot market. So they're not interested in purchasing the amount of power that they purchased before. So there's going to have to be replacement done already. Number two, we all know, and Entergy's already told everybody, that you're not going to get it at 4.2 cents a kilowatt hour going forward. Their first offer was at market price. We could buy power anywhere at market price. The situation with Vermont Yankee, the listeners should know, is that this is not a power supply problem. There is plenty of power on the market. This is strictly at what cost are we going to have to pay for the power.
Now, I understand that CVPS and Green Mountain Power put out a request for proposals for 100 megawatts of power, and they got responses offering to provide up to 1,800 megawatts of power. What do you know about that, Tony Klein, and how does that affect the debate about keeping Vermont Yankee open?
Well, I think you're exactly right that has occurred, and the utilities have told us, they haven't told us the specifics of it, but they've told us that they were pretty encouraged by what they received, that there is plenty. They actually asked for RFPs for different bundles of power, you know, whether it be all renewable energy or a mix of some fossil and renewable, whether it be 3-year contracts, 5-year contracts, 10-year contracts, 20-year contracts. So they're getting a whole mix of it back. They really haven't done all their homework on and the research about what it all means, but I think that the responses made them less nervous about the possibility of not having Vermont Yankee in the future.
Very good. We're a little bit over time here, but we got one more caller on the line. You willing to stay with us, Tony?
Sure.
Okay. We're going to go to Barry to Dick. Hello, Dick.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
General comments regarding Yankee One and all of the critique that's been coming across from people who frankly don't have the faintest idea of the real or imagined or anything else when it comes to do with the safety of the operation of this plant. I built 3 plants. I know what they're all about. There's yet to be any kind of an accident in this country other than the operator error in 3 Mile Island to even question any one of them.
Dick, have you heard anybody talk about safety on the show today?
I'm very familiar with all of the aspects that your listeners have commented on today, every single one of them. And if I were Entergy right now, I too would be rather reluctant to disclose any information like grading rates because of such of an antagonistic attitude from the people supposedly negotiating with them. They're in business to make money, plain and simple, as is every other utility company. And the fact that you have an excess of power currently available, nobody has disclosed those rates either. And nobody is going to disclose those rates until they get their most favorable propositions offered to them and they respond in kind. Yankee One will give you the absolute cheapest rate that you can get from any place. They want to keep that plant operating for the very same reason that you're trying to shut it down, which is to say the plant has additional capacity which they sell. And by the way, they sell it for considerably more than the state of Vermont is able to purchase it from. The future would be all the same thing, but they're not going to operate it here because people are saying, no, we don't want it because it's dangerous, because it's this, because it's that. Well, then they can't sell us cheap power, and you can rest assured that the rates that are going to be offered to them by these other utilities through the grid are going to go through the sky, and every ratepayer, which is to say every man, woman, and child that has an electric meter in their house, is going to be paying something in the range of 2 to 3 times what they're now paying.
Dick, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up there. We're over time already. Thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Tony Klein, your response?
Well, I didn't really quite understand what he said other than to say that no matter what the price, and we don't know what the price is that it was going to be cheaper than anything else. We don't know that until it occurs. I'm sure that if the price is cheap, that the utilities are going to look at it hard, that the Public Service Board is going to look at it hard, and that the legislature is going to look at it hard. But you can't make a decision based upon something you don't know.
Very good. Tony Klein, chair of the House Natural Resources and Energy Committee, and right here in Montpelier. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Carl. Pleasure.
And stay tuned. We're going to be back with more Equal Time in just a minute. We'll be talking with Dave Grundy. He is the chair of the East Montpelier Energy Committee, and he coordinates an energy mobilization program that has neighbors helping neighbors save energy in their homes. We'll be back right after this.